Welcome to the Gym Shorts podcast series. I'm your host, Kathy Smith.
Today, we're meeting with Lauren Hastings, the School of Environmental Studies in Apple Valley. We're so glad you could join us today, Lauren. Hi.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we are really excited. We're doing a little more introspection on different options for education, and just this has always been one of my favorites. And so we're excited to talk to you today.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Lauren, can you just please tell us a little bit about more about the School of Environmental Studies? Kind of fill us in.
Sure. So it's designed to be a very unique experience for students. And so people often realize that it is not what they thought that it was. So I appreciate the opportunity to just sort of start there. So yeah. First of all, we are part of the Rosemont Apple Valley Eagan School District, or District 196, which is the third largest district in the state and serves so many students. And yet we're this tiny little school. So we only have 400 students in our school. We have 200 juniors and 200 seniors. So it's only for upperclassmen at the high school level. Okay. And the really neat thing about our 400 students is that every single student has chosen to come there. So there is no line on a district map that where we circle the certain neighborhoods and say, all of these students must go to this school. Everybody applies to come, which can sound a little intimidating. We don't rank students based on their academic success or anything like that. We just want to know that they understand that they're signing up for something different than a traditional high school opportunity or experience. And then we have 200 juniors, like I said, and 200 seniors. And it's pretty unbelievable. We're getting ready to celebrate our 30th birthday next school year.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. It's
happy early birthday.
I know. And oftentimes, while we're called the School of Environmental Studies and have been the whole time, we are often called the Zoo School. And the reason for that is that we have this amazing building on 12 acres of land that is actually owned by the zoo. So the zoo is kind of our landlord. But more importantly than them being our landlord is that they're these awesome partners for us. And so we do a lot with them. I think that depending upon what student you talk to, some students might say, oh my goodness, I was at the zoo all of the time. And others might say, yeah, there a few times, you know, my junior year, a few times my senior year. What we know for upperclassmen is that they really need that choice in their courses, depending upon what they're interested in and what they want to go into. And so some students will opt to take courses where they're over at the zoo all of the time, and other students will choose to do that less so. But we are very grateful and proud of our partnership with the Minnesota Zoo.
So what does a typical day look like? Are there some, are the same high school curriculum requirements at your school, or what's the focus?
Sure. So because we are a public school, we have the exact same graduation requirements as any other high school in the state of Minnesota. So from that perspective, yes, we cover all of those things. However, our approach to doing it is much different. And so the biggest thing that I think a student would say feels just so different from a traditional high school experience is our approach to particularly the environmental focus. We are a magnet school. You can tell from our name, our focus is environmental studies. Sometimes people hear that and think environmental science, and that's not necessarily true. Well, we have lots of cool science opportunities. We kind of broaden that to learning more about the environment through a bigger, wider lens than just through that science lens. And we do that by immersing students in a 3-hour class. So half of their school day every day, they're in a class that we call thematic studies. But really the nickname we have here at the school is called House. And it's because it starts to feel a little bit like a home to the students when they're there for 3 hours every day throughout the school year. And it sounds like a lot, like, whoa, one class for 3 hours. And when I explain to people that there's 100 students in that class, it starts to sound like, I can't even imagine what that would look like. But here's what it looks like. We have three licensed teachers that are in charge of House. So one is in charge of all of our English language arts requirements. One is in charge of environmental studies, or environmental science, excuse me. And one is in charge of social studies. And so they work together to create themes and questions and really engage inquiry from students, thinking through an environmental lens, how they can weave together those different subject areas and get students out and about, and really kind of employing different lenses about how we might tackle a tough question. So all of junior year, we kind of ask students to think about, how did things get to be this way, right? So we are learning about different laws and ways to, like, things that have happened, even like it's world history at the 11th grade level that we cover with students. And so humans have had relationship with water in their environment from the beginning. How did that look in ancient civilizations? And then we go all the way up to, what does that look like now, right? Wow. And so we layer that traditional knowledge with experiences. So we really want students out in the natural world as much as possible. One thing that people sometimes confuse about SES is they think, oh, it's all hands-on, it's all outside. It's not. So we have a fairly rigorous curriculum that we just layer experiences on top of to really deepen that learning. It's not instead of. So you are reading books, you are writing papers, you are giving presentations. It's just that you're also going out canoeing with your friends or learning how to build a shelter so that you can survive, right? It's both. It's not either or.
So cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for giving us a little more in depth. So Lauren, what are the most common reasons juniors and seniors will finish their high school careers at SES versus a more traditional environment?
Sure. And, you know, we have really tried to pick students' brains and say, what is it that drew you here? And the answer is everything. So sometimes students have grown up going to the Minnesota Zoo and being zoo campers, and they have had this plan forever that they were going to come here, right? Yeah. Other students are much more interested in that interdisciplinary, inquiry-based, experiential learning that I was just talking about. That's really unique and happens, you know, here, yeah. and not at very many other schools, I don't think.
No.
Other students love that we're small and they want to maybe not feel like such a small fish in a large pond, right? And have some opportunities to really feel like they're part of a community. We also, something that I didn't mention, but at the end of each trimester, we have opportunities for students to take a course that we kind of, you know, J-term in colleges, where students take one class, but it's for a longer period of time, condensed into January, and they still get a credit for it. We do that here. Over the course of 7 school days, students take one class for the entire school day for 7 straight days. And so it ends up being the same amount of seat time if it was, you know, 45 minutes every day over the course of a trimester. Mm-hmm. We have kids for all day. The things we can do with them, the experiences, the places we can take them become just, it's really
unreal.
We are constantly creating new opportunities for students. I mean, the sky is the limit as far as what we're able to do. So students will go backpacking on the Superior Hiking Trail. They will do the Boundary Waters, but we also travel the world. So we've got students going to Scotland this year. We've got students going scuba diving in Roatan, Honduras, and doing some citizen science on finding different fish and kind of tracking numbers and reporting that back. So lots of very cool opportunities through that program, which really appeals to students too, as you can imagine.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I wish I was in high school.
I know. It's so great. And then to see, like I said, it runs the gamut as to why each particular student is attracted to our school. So it's so great to just sort of offer all these things and then see who gravitates towards what. Or what I love seeing is a student tries something that it wasn't on their radar. They never thought they would like it. It wasn't anything they'd ever thought of doing, but they are given this opportunity and they say, sure, I'll do it. And then they love it. And they learn something new about themselves, something new about the community that they live in. It's really neat to watch.
I think you kind of answered my next question, which is really, are there classes here that students can't find at a traditional high school? And clearly everything. I mean,
yes, yes, and yes. Yeah.
It's like a mini college in a way, where you're more on a college campus and you're with this group of people and you're really focused on, you know, the same things?
Very much. We have so many alumni that come back to us, and we also have lots of families where the siblings will all come. So we stay connected, you know, through a variety of family members. And the feedback is just always, I was so well prepared for college. I felt like they feel like they are prepared to be able to communicate with their professors, to be able to work in groups, to be able to kind of think outside the box. So many times in a traditional high school class, and of course, this isn't true always, but it's like you did lesson 11-1 yesterday. So you're going to come in and do 11-2 today and then 11-3. And it's very sequential, but you get to college and you're asked to kind of think outside the box oftentimes. And we are kind of this supportive way to practice flexing those muscles for college. So it's pretty great opportunity for most students.
I love it. Has there ever been other schools that want to mimic your programming or even in the state of Minnesota?
You know, it's so funny you say that. This is my 8th year as principal here at the school. And so I'm used to it now. But when I first started, I kid you not, people from all over the world contact us and say, we're super curious how you pull off the interdisciplinary learning, or we're very interested and inspired in your commitment to sustainability, or we're interested in your travel program and how you're able to do that. And so, yes, I have, there's a group of administrators from Kansas City that come every single year and tour our building. To kind of learn more. There's a group of teachers from Manitoba, Canada. There's a group of Norwegian teachers and faculty that that came over. So that's just to name a few in the last few years of people that come to see what we do, because we are so unique. And you can't, there is not another school that I am aware of that is like us.
Well, and kudos to you guys too, if you've got Norwegian education people coming here, like, aren't they the ultimate, you know, they've got some really great education programming.
They do. And they very much believe in the interdisciplinary piece. And so they're trying to see how are we able to do it. And I won't say seamlessly, because teachers, it's the commitment that it takes for three teachers to really be committed to a theme, but also understand the responsibility to cover state standards, but want to make sure that students have autonomy and engagement through that inquiry process and that they're getting outside. I mean, there are a lot of dots to connect there. And so it takes a lot of, and for me as a leader, I have to make sure that I have enough prep time for them, that they can really be meeting together and planning and creating these opportunities for students. And so it is something that other schools can't just pull off. They need to have the building physically set up for that kind of learning, and then also have that structure and support in place too. So I'm really happy to, I didn't invent it, I can't take credit for it, but I feel grateful to be here now and to be leading this building and to share whatever I can with anybody who reaches out.
I love it. Well, thank you. So Lauren, we talked a little bit already about what's the relationship between the Minnesota Zoo and your environmental studies.
Yes.
And you had mentioned kids can work over at the zoo. If they do, what does that look like? I mean, is it science-based classes, or how do they get outside of the classroom over to the zoo? What's that question?
And again, the answer is maybe annoying, but it totally varies, right? So the art teacher will bring them over, and maybe they'll bring their sketchbooks and be sketching the tropics trail and be looking at the tropical plants and animals and things like that, but through that artist lens, right? Maybe it's our animal care and handling class that is going over, and when the baby animals at the farm come, they're learning how to handle animals and learning about breeding and genetics and things like that. Maybe it's that interdisciplinary 3-hour class, that house class, maybe they're teaching how to take field notes and how you have to look with a scientific lens when you're looking at things, but you also have to look with what we call soft eyes too, and kind of take in the bigger picture. So they'll bring students over with their journals or their notebooks and teach them how to take notes that are accurate that you might refer to later on for a project, right? So it kind of runs the gamut. We also have this great mentor program where students identify strengths and interests that they have for what they might want to do after high school. And then we try to connect them with professionals throughout the community so that they can learn hands-on in the moment. What is this job really like? Would I really enjoy this? And what we know about the Minnesota Zoo is that it's really like a small city. If you're interested in marketing or communications, they've got that over there. So it's not, if you're interested in you know, food service, they have that over there. If you're interested in art, there's the whole exhibit design piece of it. If you're interested in education, they do so much around education there, bringing schools in for field trips, their nature-based preschool. If you're interested, obviously, in marketing or accounting, anything like that. So they have been just an awesome resource for thinking outside the box of not just, I want to be a zookeeper, but yeah, what else might you want to do? And how might we use the zoo as a resource there? So kids are going all of the time for any of those reasons. And then that intensive theme time that I talked about, where you do one class all day. Of course, not all of our students travel or the world, you know, during those times. Many students are here just taking classes during the day. And the zoo offers us so many opportunities to anything from like doing yoga in their space to I teach actually with a teacher, I just because I like to try to have my hands a little bit still with students in the classroom, a behind the scenes special zoo class where, because of our partnership, they allow our students to go back and see, you know, what do the things look like that most customers don't see or understand. So really, anything you can think of, we try to use our partnership and collaboration with the zoo.
We know that the school started in 1995, and you said you've been here 8 years. Is that right?
Right. This is year eight.
Yeah. So do you know, like, how has the school evolved? Did it start out this way? What changes have been taking place to get to where it is right now? Like, do you know that history?
So I do. And what I can say is that the people that founded this school, in collaboration with the City of Apple Valley and the Minnesota Zoo, and then of course the school district, really took their time researching some best practices pedagogically. What are things that we know from research are really effective for learners? And this idea of project-based interdisciplinary learning just kind of kept coming up. And now this would have been the early 90s, even when they were doing this research, but they just kept feeling compelled to look at that. And what we know about that kind of learning is it takes a building that is physically, architecturally designed to facilitate that kind of learning, right? And it also needs to happen on a small scale. We're not small just by chance. We're small because to do the things that we do, we have to have a cap to that, right? It's also not just chance that we are only for 11th and 12th graders. That maturity level, that trust of, we're going to be out and about around the community, around the world, and we need to know that you're going to, you know, represent yourself well and be safe and all of those things. Right. And so all of that foundationally still exists today. It continues to be evidence-based, good practice for students, for learning. So we're really proud that it wasn't just some trend that we latched onto in the early 90s, but that the research was sound, and it continues to be a great way for students to learn. Having said that, cliche answer, how have we changed? COVID changed us, of course, right? And I would like to say that we have recouped from that. We've recovered from the ways that we had to adapt for COVID. But I do think that there's some things that we know. I think from a technology standpoint, our teachers really had to stretch and learn things that maybe they wouldn't have learned otherwise, because we do value that face-to-face interaction and being in the moment and experiential learning. And we still, that's the focus of what we do. But I would say that teachers really kind of, their toolbox got a little bit bigger from that technology standpoint. And so now we still do those things, but they are able to incorporate kind of another layer of sophistication with just different apps and different ways that they've learned to communicate, like Zooming in guest speakers from outside of the community, for example. Yeah. You know, we never thought about doing that. But then when we had to use Zoom, it's a practice that continues, right? So if we have an alumni who lives in Atlanta but does something really great, now we think outside the box of how might we still get them to be a speaker even though they're not local.
Lauren, what's the percentage of high school graduates that are moving towards environmental studies in college per se? I know you mentioned that really it's not just, your school is not just about environmental studies, but is there an emphasis on that area? Is that kind of a focus, or is it just, like you said, everybody's there for different reasons?
Sure. So I would say it definitely, there's a focus on environmental studies, but it's not science specifically. So a lot of times people will say environmental science, and it's, It's yes, there's opportunities for that. And students are taking environmental science classes, but we also, for example, have like an environmental justice class that looks at more that intersection between where are we making decisions in this country and in other countries that might be impacting different populations of people in different ways. And what is past practice? What is law? What are ways that we might be able to interrupt that? So more from that people side of it and that impact side of it, socially, and less from that science perspective. But having said that, I don't have numbers from the last couple years, but we did poll alumni and say, what did you end up doing? Like, you've been to SES, what did you end up doing with that education? And what we found is actually what we suspected, which is that just a little less than half of our students actually have a formal career in something that they would say is environmentally focused. So that could be anything from environmental law to environmental science to some of those social justice things that we talked about, teaching, you know, something maybe that's environmentally based. But a lot of our students go on to be what you would think, you know, a career in medicine, maybe, or in education, or marketing, or, you know, all the interests that we know that students have. So what we say is, it's important that all people, in our opinion, have an understanding of the impact that we have on the natural world and trying to make the world more sustainable. You don't need to have a profession specifically in the environmental sciences or studies to have this be a relevant experience, not only because of the impact that we can have just as citizens of this world, but also when you do group projects, when you're thinking through that interdisciplinary lens, when you're having to manage your time, when the focus on a lot of our projects is about creativity, clear communication, critical thinking, being flexible, disagreeing with someone else, listening and understanding that you might have a different solution to this problem than I do. And how do we hear each other and still move forward? Those are all what I think are really important 21st century skills, they're often called, that are applicable to anything that you go into. You don't have to go into environmental studies or science specifically. So a lot of our students feel like they are better prepared for whatever field they go into, just because they had to kind of flex those muscles and practice those things here.
I love it. You're just really providing such a great foundation for kids. I know a lot of kids in college right now are getting out of college, like, I don't know what I'm going to do, or they don't have that thing in their line of sight that, okay, this is where I'm headed, or this is how I feel. And so I'm really excited for what you guys are doing and how you're impacting students. Good job.
Thank you. We know that the topic of the state of the environment is not necessarily the most positive feeling right now. So sometimes we think, oh, we don't want to inundate them with, and then this is wrong. And then, oh boy, you know, by 2050, if we are not, you know, I mean, all of the things that you could start to really raise panic in really a generation of students that have a lot of anxiety anyway, right? And so we really try to make sure that by the end of senior year, I had mentioned earlier that junior year is really focused on how did things come to be? How did we get here right now? Mm-hmm. Senior year is how then shall I live? So it's putting that hopeful spin on, now that I know this, what actions can I take, whether big or small, that I can feel really positive about, that I can say I can impact change, I can do something. And so they even have a capstone project that they create where they're giving back to the community in some area that resonates with them. And so we're really setting that foundation for, you can do something, you can take action. There is always hope. And I think that's a really great way to send them off into the world, whether they're going to college or right into career. We're really proud of our graduates when they walk out there. They hold their heads high, and I don't think they feel like it's doom and gloom about all of our environmental issues, which is great.
Yeah. And I think they don't know it yet, but you've given them that level of confidence to go into their next place, whether it's a four-year degree or what have you. Already being able to communicate and already being able to think critically and question and learn and not be so, you know, boundary oriented where you're just one way is the highway, you know.
Absolutely. And we know, you know, speaking of anxiety, I feel like these kids that went through COVID, you know, they just, It has some lingering effects for many, not for all. But I think that what we know is that when students practice just being open to trying things, that the more experiences they get, the more confidence that they build, and then they're willing to try something else. And we know, those of us that are adults and have navigated being teenagers and in their early 20s, that oftentimes what your plan is, you don't end up going that direction, but it's that positive forward momentum of just knowing that I'll just keep showing up and I'll keep trying and I'll meet different people and I'll have different opportunities and it'll take me different directions. A lot of students are afraid to do that, but we structure all of these opportunities for students to meet new people, to talk to people that have different ideas than you, to get out and get in that canoe, even if you've never been in one before. You might not want to do it again, but let's try it once, right? Yeah. Do winter camping, all of those different things just to kind of go outside of your safety zone, but still having that safety net of a teacher. Right? There to help. It's a pretty neat thing that we're watching happen for students, not just how they academically mature and evolve over the course of 2 years, but just really as a whole person, as a young adult.
It's just brilliant. I could talk with you all day about it. Okay, so we kind of already talked about common career paths. We're just going to kind of skip over. Is there anything more that you want to share about your programs before I ask my favorite last question?
I loved that question when I peeked ahead. You know, the only thing that I'm going to say that I think sometimes surprises people when they come and tour, I think two things that I would like to say. I do believe that extracurricular activities are really important for students to kind of round out all the things that we were talking about. And one thing that people don't always realize is that students that go to the School of Environmental Studies maintain a relationship with whatever we call it, their home high school, right? So 75% of our students come from District 196. So either Apple Valley High School, Eagan, Eastview, or Rosemont. And they can maintain that relationship and continue to be on the football team or in the school plays or in speech and debate, because we're all part of this district. So we're not a charter school, right? We have all of the resources and benefits of 196. And so I think it's the best of both worlds, right? The small, really unique opportunity, but access to all of the things that the larger schools offer. The other thing I'll say is that we have a career development program in District 196 for 11th and 12th graders, where you're able to practice different careers that you might go into. So everything from like aviation to construction, and SES actually has the most offerings, even though we're the smallest school. So students at our school, or when you tour our school, you'll see a forensics classroom, you'll see a certified nursing assistant classroom, a music production classroom, an emergency medical services classroom where they learn about being a firefighter, a police officer, and a first responder. So sometimes people say, but why would that be at SES? What does that have to do with environmental studies? But really, we want to help cultivate these 11th and 12th graders in whatever field they want to pursue, to be the students we were talking about, right? That can communicate, that can be feel like they are an effective part of a community, and that doesn't necessarily have to be environmentally focused. So just really feel grateful to have the opportunities associated with a big school district, but being our small school.
Oh, I love so it. Much. Okay, my very last question for you, Lauren, and one that I love. I feel like it's a great way for our people to get to know, you know, a little bit more about who we are as people when we say, well, okay, what, Lauren, is your favorite children's book and why?
So I thought about this one, and I have three kids of my own, and they knew that I was a sucker. If they asked me for a book, I always would say yes, because I loved reading to them all of the time. I was in theater when I was younger. Aww. So I do all the voices and
fun. You must be fun to listen to.
it was a very fun time for me when the kids were little and they still wanted me to read to them. Sometimes I can still get them to let me on car rides, but I think the book that all three of my kids really liked, and I really liked reading to them, it's a Kevin Hankes book, and it's Lily's Purple Plastic Purse. And I have a daughter named Lily. And so she's my first. And so it was a gift. I wasn't familiar with him as an author, but because of the name, and we just really got obsessed with him and bought all of his books and learned all of his characters. And, but it all started with Lily and her purple plastic purse and her purse that played that jaunty tune with her quarters and her boots. And we really, really loved her as just a strong character that felt her feelings and worked them through. And it was really fun to read that one to all three of my kids.
Oh, that is one of my daughter's favorites too. I just, exactly what you said, just very independent and strong. And she's just, yeah, that's awesome. I love that book. So thank you so much.
Yes. Well,
it's just been such a pleasure learning more about SES and the part of the district that's on the zoo campus and the things that you guys do. I'm really grateful for this time, and I really appreciate you. So thank you so much, Lauren.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, you have a great rest of your day.